So we're going to get right back into Genesis, and we're going to talk about the Sabbath, as Jackson just read and the others from that family read different verses about the Sabbath. And maybe the place we would start is to remember it's a Jewish practice. So how does it apply to us? You know, we're Christians. We're New Testament people, right? Well, that's a good reminder to go back to where Jackson just read Genesis 2. God creates on 6 days, and when he comes to the seventh day, it says he rests. And then you read that and you think, why does God need to rest, right? That doesn't seem like a thing God would need to do. You might have been here a couple of weeks ago when we talked about all the verbs that are used of God in Genesis and the creation story, and rest is the one that doesn't seem to fit. Now, actually, what's interesting about this word rest is it's actually the word Sabbath as a verb. So when you think about all the verbs, you think about, what does it mean for God to Sabbath? And specifically, in fact, can we throw up the slide there, Garrett? So if you look at verse 3, God blesses the seventh day. So there's another verb. He blesses, and then he makes it holy, or he consecrates it, or sanctifies it. So the words bless and sanctify are pretty good clues as to what's going on with the resting or the Sabbathing that God's doing. In fact, if we just look a few verses earlier, Genesis 1:28, we see what God does when he blesses. God blessed them. That is, the human people that he created. God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it, have dominion over the fish and the birds and every living thing. So to bless people, to bless the human creation, means that we then take that blessing and we share it with the creation around us, as we talked about last week. God uses the same language in Genesis 9 when Noah and his family come off the ark and they're told to bless and be fruitful and multiply. And then Abraham in Genesis 12, where he's called, we read this also recently, God blesses him to be a blessing. So perhaps the first thing we can say is Sabbath is not about God sitting around in heaven waiting for something to happen. But when God finishes creation, another way of saying when God puts things right, when he puts them in order, his work of blessing is just getting started. So we're in week 3 of this series on creation, and if I had to summarize each of the first 2 weeks with a sentence, which means if you missed the first 2 weeks, you might think, well, gosh, I guess I didn't miss much if it can be summarized in a sentence, but here it is. Actually, by the way, I would encourage you to go back and listen, because really we're kind of building through these 7 weeks. And so there's a website on the back under my name of the bulletin. You can get the sermons if you missed them. You can get some like bonus material if you're that kind of person who likes extra stuff. Get that on the back of the bulletin, the website that has that. But week 1 was this. God, maybe we put God in all caps, God brings creation into being out of chaos. Week 2, God then sets creation in order. And so today's summary statement might be, God then brings blessing to that creation. Now notice something. We are in week 3, and we're just into Genesis 2, and at this point, we got nothing to do. God has been doing all the verbing. If you know what I mean, right? God's doing the acting. We are the ones who are being acted upon. We haven't been given anything to do in the first chapter. It's not about our work or our creation. God does that. And so God finishes creation by resting and blessing. For us to be a part of creation, our first response is to receive that rest and that blessing and then act from that place. So the beautiful invitation is, it doesn't matter who you are, how you got here this morning, what you have to offer to God, it doesn't matter. You start by trusting in God. That's where it always starts. So maybe we can find some insight from what this means for us. And maybe the first time that Sabbath is used as a noun is a helpful way to start on how we are supposed to respond with Sabbath. So the first time it's used as a noun is Exodus. So if you remember the Exodus story, the people are led out of slavery and they're in the wilderness. And in Exodus 15, they are singing songs of celebration. They are pumped as they should be, right? Egypt is left behind, swamped over by the waters of the sea. And they're praising God in Exodus 15. And by verse 2 of chapter 16, they've gone from congregational singing to complaining. That's never happened in the history of the church ever, but it happened then. So I say, Not true, right? It happens, right? We quickly can go from congregational singing to complaining, and it starts in Exodus 16. And so what does God do? He gives them a reason to understand who they are. They're hungry, they need something to eat, and God provides. And what is it that God provides? What is it that God provides? Manna. And what is it is what God provides, because manna means what is it. So what is it that God provides? God provides what is it as they look at it and go, what is it? It's manna. But what it is their recognition that every day they're going to have to trust God to provide. As you remember the story, they're going to have to get up every day, get what they need, gather it, do the work to gather and receive the gift of God, and they're going to have to go do that the next day and the next day, because God doesn't do leftovers. God doesn't leave more behind. He doesn't say hoard. He says trust. Does that remind you of a prayer that Jesus said to pray about having to look for daily bread every single day? And in the midst of this daily manna gathering, along comes the seventh day. And look at Exodus 16 and look at what God says about what they're supposed to do on that seventh day. Exodus 16, let's start in verse 23. Moses says, "This is what the Lord commanded. Tomorrow is to be a day of Sabbath rest, a holy Sabbath to the Lord. So bake what you want to bake, boil what you want to boil, save whatever is left, and keep it until morning." Exact opposite of what they're supposed to do days 1 through 6. "So they saved it until morning. As Moses commanded, it did not stink or get maggots. Eat it today," Moses said, "because today is a Sabbath to the Lord. You will not find any of it on the ground today. 6 days you're to gather it, but on the seventh day, the Sabbath, there will not be any." So every day the people go to sleep, they get up, and they receive the gift God has given. Anybody want to guess what some of the folks do on day 7? They go looking for bread, right? They go looking for manna. Surprise, surprise, they didn't quite understand, some of them at least, and they have to learn the hard way that God is true to his word. God provides what he says he will provide. And so they go to sleep, wake up to receive the gift. And that takes us right back to the creation story again because of the way each day is described. Genesis 1:5 is one example. There was evening and there was morning the first day. It says that for day 1 through all the way through day 6. And if you're just kind of reading quickly, you might miss the fact that their days are, to put it bluntly, backward, right? I mean, don't our days start when we wake up and our feet hit the floor and we get going? Days start when we get started, right? It only makes sense. Except creation gives a complete reversal of that. And there's a very real reason for it. The day doesn't start when we get started. The day actually starts when we are done, because it's a reminder that our day and our work is not what matters most. When you stop and you go to sleep, what happens? Well, for you, absolutely nothing, right? Other than you probably dream and drool and flip around in your bed, because sleep is the great equalizer. I don't care how beautiful you are. I don't care how smart you are. I don't care how accomplished you are. When you go to sleep, you're as ugly as the rest of us. I didn't mean it quite like that. That came out wrong. It wasn't in my notes, I promise. But I mean, you're a disheveled mess. I mean, I'm sorry. It's just true, right? If we were to point the camera on you while you sleep, it might not be a pretty sight, right? For 6, 7, 8, 9, maybe 10 hours for some of us, we're useless. We're powerless. And that's exactly when the day starts, is when you have nothing to offer except your complete trust. Because guess who's still working while you're sleeping? God is, right? Things are growing in your yard that you aren't doing a thing for. If you work in the healthcare profession, you know, people's bodies are healing while they sleep. We know that, right? The restorative power of sleep, and we have no control over it. And so the beauty of it is that we are invited to trust in the God who starts the day when we stop. That's how the day begins. But it also means that when you wake up into a world God is already working, and he invites you to join him in the world that he is creating. Maybe we could sum up this invitation, which I think is what it is. It's really an invitation. We could sum it up this way. We can either work from a place of rest, or we can rest after going full bore and doing every ounce of work we can do. Do you see the difference? When we work from a place of rest, it's a place of trust. When we rest after a place of work, it's usually our strength, our energy, and we go till 7, 8, 9, 10 o'clock, whatever it is, and then we plop down on a couch or we throw ourselves in a bed, and then, of course, we start the next day. We get going the next day when we think we start and God's already working and we're still tired. And we jump up and we think, what else do I need to do today? Sabbath is ultimately an invitation where we get to choose to trust in God and rest in his provision first. And then from that place, we work, we serve, we bless God, and we bless others. Sabbath is the gift of freedom. It frees you from being defined by what you do, what you accomplish, how much you get done. Your identity and purpose are found in a place of rest in God, and when they are, you become more human, more like you were created to be. And then you get up, and you get to serve with more of a place of rest and trust in God. And it makes me wonder, what would it look like if we, as followers of Jesus, were more intentional about starting our day where the day of creation starts, in the evening? For some of us, it would mean we'd probably slow down a little sooner at the end of what we call our day, right? We wouldn't go so heavy, you know, to the floor all the way till we have no energy left. We wouldn't probably try to bleed every moment for its value. Now, on the flip side, others of us, it might mean the opposite, where when we see the day as a gift, then it's not to be squandered. Why would we want to waste time just watching or scrolling or gaming or self-medicating? Because, you know, the world gives us two different idols. They're very different, but they kind of end up in the same place. The first idol is the idol of entertainment. This is the one that says each day you should go after what feels good to you in the moment. And oh my goodness, do we live in a world that's got plenty of entertainment? Like, I know I'm not that old, but I kind of am old, I guess, because I'm old enough to remember when you had like four channels on the TV and you had to get up to turn the knob. Like, you had four choices and then eventually they'll go to snow at night, right, when there's nothing at like 1 or 2 in the morning. Now, like, it's nonstop all the time, so much so that how do you even pick how to go entertainment? Like, how do you even stop in Netflix to pick something to watch? You could scroll endlessly just looking at what the options are. The world is happy to throw entertainment options at us to feed our desires. But that's a false idol. And that's not rest. That is still just another form of rushing through our day trying to find meaning. The other idol it offers us is the idol of accomplishment, because there's always more to do. I mean, have you ever gone to bed and thought, it's all done? Somehow my whole list is completely finished. If so, please talk to me, because I sure like to know what your secret is. I always go to bed and there's more to do. You know, there's this thing called church, and like, I don't know about you guys, but like you guys never stop having needs. Like, the elders and the staff here, like, you know, like, so much so that, like, you know, we send you emails asking for you to give us gift cards because we need stuff more. Like, there's always need back and forth, right? Apparently I had some weird needs this week, you know? The needs never end. The stuff never ends. Even if you're retired, I'm pretty sure you go to bed thinking, oh, tomorrow I got to do X. And when we don't bow to the idol of accomplishment, it's first about trust. It's like God really doesn't need anybody to help him on the team of getting everything done right. Like he doesn't, there's no opening in the heavenly council for, golly, who's in charge of getting things done? Oh my goodness, I need Kyle DeBrice to do that. Like, I don't know what else I'm going to do. Does God do that? No, of course he doesn't. He doesn't need me. He doesn't need any of us. But what he does is offer us an invitation where he says, I'm on my throne. I'm resting in a place of trust and blessing. And I invite you to receive that. And when you receive that, you're like, oh my goodness, what a complete flip from what the world offers. We can now trust and then serve from that place. I like the way somebody put it. They said, is Sunday the last day of your week, or is Sunday the first day of your week? Do you see the difference there? Is Sunday the period at the end of the sentence you are writing, or is Sunday the first word of a sentence that God is writing in your life? I'm speaking literally, of course, but I'm also even speaking more about the idea Sabbath is just the question of who is holding the pencil in your life. Sabbath is a gift that turns our focus away from ourselves and our control to a God who does not need us to run the universe. He's got it. But what he wants, what he offers us, is an invitation to participate with him in his leading and guiding of his creation. He invites us into a Sabbath life that we get to share with others. See, that's the beauty of Sabbath. It is not a rest where we just kind of just tune everything out and we just kind of like go into a coma. Sabbath is something that we receive and share. And look at how specific it gets in the Old Testament. I want you to look with me at Deuteronomy 15, because I love what this does. In a difficult context, look at what Deuteronomy 15 describes, starting in verse 12. If any of your people, Hebrew men or women, sell themselves to you and serve you 6 years, in the seventh year you must let them go free. Don't think seven is a coincidence there. And when you release them, don't send them away empty-handed. Supply them liberally from your flock, your threshing floor, and your winepress. Give to them as the Lord your God has blessed you. Oh, there's that word blessing. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and the Lord your God redeemed you. This is why I give you this command today. Now, it is a completely different sermon that we don't have time for, although, I mean, I'd have time for, but you don't, of course. We could do another sermon on slavery in the Bible, right? Because it's a difficult topic, and it's one that we read the Bible, and sometimes we scratch our heads and go, man, come on, go a little further. But what happens is, when you introduce the Sabbath principle to slavery like we just read, there is no stopping the fact that slavery will end. It has to end, because when Sabbath is taken seriously, then we're all free in Christ. That's where it's going. You know what the biggest problem, maybe not the biggest, one of the main problems that American slaveholders had that who read this book and found that it, from their perspective, it confirmed slavery? They read this book and they looked at what was happening. They did not see where God was going. They looked at this and they saw a description of what every human culture to that point had accepted. To them, slavery was as common as electricity. They all plugged into it and built their systems on it. But what American slaveholders missed was what it described was not what it prescribed. It described a broken world, and when Sabbath was introduced, there was no limiting it. Once Sabbath began to break out, it could only mean freedom for all people. That's exactly what God was up to. And we can have lots of questions as we do about what it looks like, but it is clear. Sabbath is going to run wild once God sets it free. And God sets the example in Genesis 2. He is a Sabbathing God who is going to unleash Sabbath on his creation. And one way we know this is in a book of grace called Leviticus. Now, that doesn't sound like a book of grace to you if you know the book of Leviticus, but I'm going to show you in the next 5 minutes why Leviticus should be your new favorite book of grace. Okay? Leviticus 23. You can look at it. We'll just talk about it briefly. It describes festivals or feasts, and you can read Leviticus 23, and you're like, yeah, that doesn't apply to me at all. It's kind of boring stuff about, like, do this and don't do that or whatever. But in Leviticus 23, it describes the festival of weeks, called weeks because it is 7 days, 7 weeks of 7 days. Coincidence? I think not. 7 weeks of 7 days. And maybe the festival of weeks doesn't ring a big bell for you. Totally understandable. But when you get to Acts chapter 2, I bet you're going to recognize it. Acts 2 is when the church begins. And the Feast of Weeks is called Pentecost. Same thing. And when you get to the Feast of Weeks, which, by the way, is 50 days. We'll come to 50 in just a second again. Peter gets up and the others get up and they start speaking in other languages. And some people say these guys are clearly drunk. And Peter says in Acts 2:15, they are not drunk as you suppose. It's only 9 a.m, for goodness sake. My addition. This is what was spoken by the prophet Joel. In the last days, God says, I will pour out my spirit on all people. Your sons and daughters will prophesy. Your young men will see visions. Your old men will dream dreams. If you were here last week and you were sober, you'll remember I read that verse. I also threw that one in too. That wasn't in my notes either, for good reason, probably. But if you were here last week and you were paying attention, let's put it that way. then you remember Joel was the prophet. And here's Peter. He's got a ton of these verses in his head because they were way better at memorizing than we are. I just gave you one verse, Genesis 1:27. Peter had so much more memorized. And what does he pull out of his hip pocket or his brain pocket or whatever? He pulls a verse describing the freedom that came. It doesn't use the word Sabbath, but it surely is a Sabbath principle that all people are going to have the Spirit poured out on them. And that's Pentecost, 7 weeks of seven. 50 days from your favorite book of grace, Leviticus, as you will now see again because of Leviticus 25, starting in verse 8, where we get that 50 idea come out in a really powerful way. Leviticus 25, let's pick it up in verse 8. Count off 7 Sabbath years, 7 times 7 years, so that 7 Sabbath years amount to a period of 49 years. Have the trumpet sounded everywhere on the 10th day of the 7th month, on the Day of Atonement, sound the trumpet throughout your land. Consecrate the 50th year and proclaim liberty throughout the land to all its inhabitants. It will be a jubilee for you. Jubilee. Each of you is to return to your family property and to your own clan. We went from 7 weeks of 7 days. Now we're to 7 years of 7 days. And what is God up to? He's up to this jubilee idea where everyone goes back to the land that they had sold. If they couldn't afford it, they get their ancestral land back. Everyone who may have sold themselves into slavery gets to go back. The slate is wiped clean. Everybody walks free. That's what God is up to. That's what he's planning to do, right? And scholars tell us that they don't think the year of jubilee was ever actually put in practice fully. And can you blame them? Because who can do all that? Who can totally wipe the slate clean except God? So of course it points forward to Jesus, right? I mean, how can we not look anywhere but Jesus? And what does he go around doing on the Sabbath? What does Jesus get in trouble for on the Sabbath? Not going to church too much, right? He doesn't get in trouble for, I think someone said he's healing, right? In fact, I saw 3 main things Jesus does on the Sabbath. He teaches, so now he is our authority, right? So he is now the king of the Sabbath, the Lord of the Sabbath. He allows his disciples to eat. Even the edge of the grain from the edges of the field. Isn't that interesting? We now feast not just on laws and rules, but we feast on the manna Jesus provides. And then he heals, as if to say, I am restoring the broken creation that we made at the very beginning. And so we get to John 5, and there's this blind man. He's healed by Jesus, and of course, it's the Sabbath. And of course, the religious leaders are not happy, so they come to him. And then Jesus says, listen to what he says. John chapter 5, verse 17. My Father is always at his work to this very day, and I too am working. Isn't that interesting? God is resting, but he's working. He is always working, Jesus says, even when we sleep, even on the Sabbath. For this reason, of course, they tried to kill him. Not only was he breaking the Sabbath, he was even calling God his own Father, making himself equal with God. Jesus is saying, I'm just doing what my Father did. I'm just pointing you back to creation. They say he's breaking the Sabbath. Another way to say that is he's loosing the Sabbath. He's kind of loosening it up. When Lazarus came out of the tomb, when Jesus called him out and brought him back to life, Jesus said, loose his bandages. Jesus is now loosing the Sabbath in a way that says it's not a restriction that's been made. Oh, you took 14 steps, don't go number 15, right? Oh, you opened a door, don't close it, or whatever. He is saying Sabbath is on the loose because my freedom, my life, the gift of what I bring, that's on the loose. In fact, maybe it's not too much of a stretch to call him Jubilee Jesus because that's what he's up to. Let me give you one more verse before we wrap up. So we get to live in the Sabbath hope of Jesus right now. But then we have this promise that one day the true and full and complete Sabbath will come. It's said simply in Hebrews 4, verse 9. There remains then a Sabbath rest for the people of God. That tells me we will Sabbath forever in God's new creation. So we probably ought to practice it right now because it's what we're going to do forever. And it certainly doesn't mean we're taking an eternal nap. And it certainly, you'll be glad for this, doesn't mean we're going to be in an eternal church service with unending sermons. Though again, that sounds pretty good to me, but it's not going to be that. We are going to live in this new creation fully where things are completely and perfectly in order. No more scammy emails. Yes. Earlier I mentioned that creation ends each day with there's an evening and a morning. What I didn't tell you was every day ends that way but the seventh day. Isn't it interesting that all the days of creation end, but the seventh day when God finally assumes his authority over all that he's made, Genesis doesn't say it ever ends. As if to say the Sabbath that God brings, it's never going to end. Now, it went through some bumps and bruises, right? It went to a place where people weren't honoring it very well. People were like disregarding it, doing injustice, and then going, showing up for the Sabbath, acting as if everything was okay. And certainly we don't do it as well either. I didn't spend a lot of time, but I would really encourage you to spend some time thinking about how you order your day and your week around this principle of resting and trusting first before you start doing and acting. But the idea is, it's an invitation. The Sabbath never ends, so we're invited to participate in what God is doing. Because in Jesus, every day is Sabbath, every year is Jubilee, all pointing to the day when nothing is left but Sabbath. So let me just close with a couple of questions. How are you doing as you go about doing your life? Are you working? Are you grasping? Are you taking? Are you moving? Are you shaking? Are you making things happen with your might? Or are you resting? Are you receiving? Are you living? Are you trusting in the Sabbath-giving God, the one who did all the work we need on the cross? He then walked out of that tomb, bringing us a new Sabbath. And I don't think it's a stretch to say right now, as we sit in this room, right now, Jesus the Christ is at the right hand of the Father as they do their eternal Sabbath together. And one day we're going to gather around that throne in the new heavens and the new earth, and we're going to celebrate it forever. And whatever our view of Sabbath is, whatever our view of life-giving is, it's probably going to blow that away as we celebrate and share in the life God has given us forever. If you don't know that life, we would love to talk to you about that, because that's why we're here. If you go out those back doors to my left, there'll be one of our leaders out there after the service at their connection corner table. They'd love to talk to you about it. No pressure, but they'd love to talk to you about the life that Jesus offers. And if you know this life, if this is the life that you live, even if you've kind of stumbled through this week and you've not been very Sabbathy, then today is the day we get to celebrate the Lord's death and resurrection and renew that connection and live from that place. And so communion tables are all throughout the room. If Jesus is the Lord of your Sabbath, let's celebrate him this morning. Let's pray. Thank you, Lord, for the gift of true and eternal rest in you. Thank you that that gives us a reason to live, a place from which to live, and it gives us the opportunity to use what you've given us to bless each other and to bless the world and to point them the Sabbath that you have offered all of us. We celebrate Jesus now and the gift he gives as we come around this table and we lift him up and thank him and celebrate him in his name. Amen.